Hey, Corey here. We've had an influx of new listeners, and so I just want to make sure that if you are new to the podcast, you don't just jump in and start listening to these daily episodes, which we've been doing. Please go back and listen to the first at least 8 episodes so you have an idea of what Collapse is, what it is that Corey is talking about. Also, if you've been with us for a while and you're enjoying the content, please join us on Patreon. We would love to see you there. There's a link, as always, in the description.
Verwandle deine Leidenschaft mit Shopify in ein Business und knack Umsatzrekorde mit dem Checkout mit der weltweit besten Conversion. Du hast richtig gehört. Der Checkout mit der weltweit besten Conversion. Der legendäre Checkout von Shopify vereinfacht das Shoppen auf deiner Website bis hin zu Social Media und überall dazwischen. Ja, das ist Musik für deine Ohren. Wie du es auch drehst und wendest, mit Shopify kannst du zu einem echten Hit werden. Starte deinen Test noch heute für nur 1 Euro pro Monat auf shopify.de/rekorde.
There is a word that gets thrown around a lot about those of us who believe that collapse is inevitable. That word is doomer. Curious how you feel about that word. Do you feel that you're a doomer? And what does it mean to be a doomer? This is a question that I have sort of struggled with since the beginning of doing the podcast, and even before that, just as I approached the idea of collapse and its certainty, and just kind of struggling with what's the appropriate attitude to take towards it, and the sort of, what do I want to present to other people around my thoughts and feelings, right? There's this question of optimism versus pessimism, and where do they meet, and is there something beyond just those two options to describe the way that I feel about collapse or that others might feel about it as well. So we'll get into that here a little bit in today's episode. This is coming from an article in phys.org titled "New Research Explores Climate Change and the Limits of Human Progress." This was written by Kerry Gates at the University of Notre Dame about Roy Scranton, who is the director of the University of Notre Dame's Environmental Humanities Initiative. And Roy wrote a book, it's called Impasse, Climate Change and the Limits of Progress, in which he discusses sort of this paradox of climate change, of collapse, and what he feels is the appropriate attitude or outlook to have regarding it. During the episode, we're going to discuss two different paradoxes. One of those is the paradox of collapse itself, and the other is the paradox of how we feel about it. He addresses one of those paradoxes. I'm going to address the other a little bit separately. So just to read a little bit about what his feelings are, Roy Scranton, on the paradox of collapse, he says this. It says, "The biggest problem we face with climate change isn't excessive carbon emissions or energy usage, and it isn't the fundamental imbalance created by human activities that threatens ecosystems and has pushed the planet into instability. The deeper problem, he argues, lies in the complexity of civilization itself, a global industrial society that has grown both unsustainably expensive and dangerously vulnerable to the environmental stresses that accompany climate change. Because of this, he says, humanity is at an impasse." And later on, he calls this a paradox. Now, just addressing that first paragraph, saying that the problem isn't necessarily the carbon emissions, it's not the energy usage, it's not the imbalance that we've created by our activities, it's the complex system that we've created that can't react to those and to the changes that will come with climate change. Obviously, this is discounting. He's not talking about the fact. This is a very human perspective, right? He's talking about the impact on humanity, not really considering the impact on Earth itself or on nature, on the millions of other species of animals that are being affected by humans' choices. From a human perspective, he's saying, yeah, we've caused all these problems, and it's leading us towards, you know, this climate change issue and ecosystem failure and all of that. But as far as how that affects humans, the problem is just that our system is too complex to be able to react positively or to even survive the consequences. So from a human perspective, I agree with him. From a wider perspective, I think there's a lot more to it and that statement may not be correct. But that said, he talks about this impasse as being paradoxical. Essentially, we are hitting a point where we have to have this sort of acceptance of what's going on, and we have to be able to jump into the unknown future, whether, again, that's a forced collapse or whether that's a collapse that we bring upon ourselves. That's the paradox that I view around collapse inevitability. Either we do nothing about it or we don't do enough about it, and we careen right off this cliff as we, you know, from climate change and ecosystem failure and biodiversity loss and all of the other things. Alternatively, we do something about it, and that something that we have to do is intentionally collapse the system that is causing collapse. We have to stop with all of the carbon emissions, right? Which means we have to shut down industry at least dramatically more so than we are doing now, right? We have to change everything about the way we view economies and successful economies being about growth and consumption and human population growth and all of these things, right? That in and of itself is also collapse. One option is likely going to be better than the other in the long term, but it's a paradox in that either way, it's a catch-22, we're going to collapse. Well, from there, he goes into the idea of pessimism, and he asserts the only path forward is through embracing what he terms ethical pessimism. He says, quote, "A lot of people confuse pessimism with nihilism, apathy, and despair. But pessimism is actually about recognizing our limits, letting go of unrealistic goals, finding solidarity in the fact of human suffering, and doing what you can now, not in some utopian future." Goes on to say, "Modern pessimism emerged as a skeptical critique of early Enlightenment hubris, but it has roots in ancient wisdom from Sophocles to the Bhagavad Gita." Sorry, I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right. "Both the history of philosophy and modern insights from psychology show that pessimism is not only an effective way to deal with big problems, but a healthy approach to the unpredictability of circumstance, especially in fraught and difficult times." Going back to the idea of doomer and doomerism, I see all over the place sort of this criticism of doomerism, right? And the more mainstream approach is to have optimism around our ability to make changes. Basically, they say if you fall to pessimism and doomerism, you just throw your hands up and give up, and that's not the right way to approach this. They say you have to be optimistic and you have to look at, you know, be positive about the changes that can be made and work towards those. But I have long felt that that is a huge part of our problem. The more optimistic society is, the more they're just passing the problem on to someone else. If people are writing articles and they're saying, yeah, climate change is a big threat, but not to fret, don't worry, there's this thing that we're going to do to fix it. And so then everyone reading the article can say, ah, oh, isn't that great? Somebody is in charge here. Somebody is taking on this problem. And I can continue to live the way that I'm living. I can continue to consume. I can continue to, you know, business as usual. And so the masses, the 99.999% of people, are able to just kind of let their conscience be happy with that and say, we can be, you know, we can let this go. We're fine. That's the problem with optimistic takes. Now, yeah, if you go too far on the other end and say, and you get apathetic and you say either there's absolutely nothing that we can do to make any sort of changes, or I don't really care, you know, it doesn't matter what I do, it doesn't matter what we do as a society, there's absolutely no hope and no changing anything. Well, that's also a problem because, yeah, there are things that we can do to mitigate it, but it takes a global effort and consensus on what those changes have to be. I'm not saying that individual people are going to change the trajectory of collapse, but individual people can apply pressure to the larger organizations, to the leadership, to the corporations who are driving what will happen with collapse and to what extreme it goes. I'm sure corporations love when they see that people are saying, oh, yeah, like green, you know, green energy is the solution and everything will be fine, right? Someone's taking care of this. And so the corporations can continue to drive shareholder value, and we're fine with that. It needs to be that people say and put pressure on and say, there are immediate changes that need to be had, but like we are screwed if we do not act and make those changes as a society. And that requires some pessimism. And so, yes, again, in this case, Scranton is calling it ethical pessimism. He says, in Impasse, he examines the myth of progress, how cultures have navigated societal collapse, failures in climate change communication, political extremism, and the end of the world as we know it, ultimately concluding that the situation does not seem to be comprehensible within progressive modernity. Quote, these conclusions lead to a paradoxical and perilous ethical precipice, he writes in the book. The only way to cross the gap between progressive carbon capitalist modernity and whatever comes next is to make a leap of faith, committing ourselves to an unknowable future. The article says that the second half of the book explores the origins of optimism and pessimism as both dimensions of personality and cognitive strategies, citing evidence from philosophy to neuroscience as Scranton makes his case for ethical pessimism. Our bias towards optimism, he cautions, may be a characteristic of great evolutionary advantage in the long term, but under conditions of global ecological catastrophe has proven highly maladaptive. Therefore, he concludes, pessimism is an accurate, appropriate, and above all, ethical response to the current situation, perhaps the only ethical response available. Okay, now here at the end, I'm going to read the last paragraph. This is where it, again, becomes a little bit paradoxical and confusing, and this is where my mind has tried to wrap around this idea over the past several years. It says, pessimism is fundamentally about recognizing and living within natural human limits. It's about recognizing that suffering is inevitable but not unbearable. It's about learning to die and learning to live with death. And finally, it's about committing to a radical and paradoxical hope, the hope that life might be worth living after the end of the world. To me, that is an optimistic statement, right? To say that no matter the situation, life is still worth living, that there can still be happiness, right? That I can still succeed individually, or even if I am suffering, it's still worth being alive through that, right? Not everyone feels that way, and that's up to the individual to decide how they feel about that. For me, someone who has not gone through great physical suffering, it's pretty hard for me to be able to confidently say how I'm going to feel as I go through it. But I can try and have the attitude now that I feel that life is worth living, and that through suffering, I hope that remains the same, right? So, yeah, it's this question of like being realistic and pragmatic, pessimistic even about the situation, but from an attitude perspective, from a mentality perspective, having an air of positivity. And I find that that's what keeps me going, right? That's what keeps me from collapsing within myself into a puddle of despair and anxiety. Kellen talked about this in episode 15, our first coping episode, when he brought up the Stockdale Paradox by James Stockdale. He was an admiral, prisoner of war during the Vietnam War. He spent years and years, I believe it was something like 7 years as a prisoner of war in absolutely terrible conditions, being tortured, watching his prison mates pass away. And essentially he was asked, you know, how do you get through this? And there's this core idea of his paradox, which states, quote, you must never confuse the faith that you will prevail in the end, which you can never afford to lose, with the discipline to confront the most brutal facts of your current reality, whatever they might be. And I think that pretty much hits it right on the head. Now, he's saying faith that you will prevail in the end. I don't necessarily think that that means for me that, like, no matter what happens with collapse, I'll be fine. You know, it's not like main character syndrome where I pretend that, you know, society collapses around me and I'm the hero that makes it through. That's not necessarily it. but confusing the faith that no matter what happens, I can control my own feelings about it, right? And sort of the idea that as long as I do my best with what's in my control, I can at least feel at peace with that. Now, also, of course, having the discipline to confront the brutal facts of my current reality. From a coping perspective, it does take, and maybe it is a little bit unrealistic, right, to hope for the best possible outcome for yourself individually. And the whole idea of resilience and preparation is to say, how far can I take myself? How far can I get with the most realistic and, you know, possible preparations that I can make for myself? I'm not going to go to, you know, to some extreme and sacrifice my life now, sacrifice, you know, my well-being. I'm not going to not pay my mortgage so that I can, you know, go to some outer limit of preparation. There are basic preparations that I can make that I can feel good about and that I can be confident will get me a certain way. And I have to be able to just say that's good enough, right? And keeping a little room for hope that, yeah, you know what? Maybe the future won't be as bad as I fear. Or maybe for me, the outcome will end up being bearable. And then committing to myself that no matter what does come, I will do my best to keep a good air of positivity and appreciation for life through it. Now, I know not everyone will agree with me on that. There are plenty of people who do view nihilism as the best approach. And for you as an individual, that may be true. I'm not trying to tell anyone how they should view things. I'm more just describing the way that my own brain works. I fully admit that there is probably a level of delusion that I feed myself, right? In telling myself that, hey, there's a possibility that I'll make it through and that my family will be fine, right? But that's a part of coping and preserving mental health. Now, this book, especially, is not necessarily talking about individual positivity, right? He's talking about ethical pessimism, and I think it's just as much pertinent in a sort of macro lens. As a society, we sort of need to have this air, this attitude of, look, stuff is really bad, and it's going to be really bad. We need to stop saying what is the best case scenario that we can possibly achieve and then pretending like that's a given. Every climate change article that you see out there is like saying, here's all the bad things that could happen with climate change if we don't fix it. And at the end it says, but there's hope. And here's how we're going, you know, here's what's happening that's going to make it so that we can achieve that. And, you know, if you dare say that the most optimistic outlook isn't the most likely, you get branded a doomer and you must hate humanity and you must want to see us fail, that sort of thing. That's what needs to change. As a society, until we actually fully understand and embrace the impact of what's coming, we can't really make the changes necessary to mitigate it. All right, I've blabbed on for this for far too long. My apologies for the rant. I have not read this book yet, Impasse. I think I may give it a shot and see what his case is for ethical pessimism and maybe how closely it does actually align to my own feelings about the situation. After I have read it, I'll come back and give an update. If you have read it, would love to hear your thoughts. Feel free to reach out to me. As always, you can reach me at Corey John, KoryJon on Reddit, or you can send me an email at breakingdowncollapse@gmail.com. Also, please feel free to join our Patreon. On Patreon, we have a Discord channel, so we can chat via Discord. Love to hear your thoughts and ideas. We're also beginning a sort of new chapter in the Patreon channel with the bonus episodes, wherein we'll be discussing one-on-one with listeners. We'll be having interviews from other patrons. I'll be asking questions about how people are going about their lives in the face of collapse. What is their attitude with it all? What are they doing to feel the most prepared? How do they cope? so many ideas and questions that I think you all have that we could benefit greatly from hearing from each other. So that's happening over on Patreon. $5 a month goes a long way to help support me and keep me producing these episodes. Thanks so much. Have a great rest of your day.
Verwandle deine Leidenschaft mit Shopify in ein Business und knack Umsatzrekorde mit dem Checkout mit der weltweit besten Conversion. Du hast richtig gehört. Der Checkout mit der weltweit besten Conversion. Der legendäre Checkout von Shopify vereinfacht das Shoppen auf deiner Website bis hin zu Social Media und überall dazwischen. Na, das ist Musik für deine Ohren. Wie du es auch drehst und wendest, mit Shopify kannst du zu einem echten Hit werden. Starte deinen Test noch heute für nur einen Euro pro Monat auf shopify.de/rekorde.
Hey, Corey here. If you are listening to the back catalog of Breaking Down Collapse, thank you. Those episodes are so vital. They're so important. But I also wanted to let you know that I am now doing daily episodes. Yes, that's right. Here on the podcast, daily episodes. So if you are enjoying the back catalog, great. Please also feel free to zoom forward to the most recent episodes. Catch us daily. They are quick little episodes, and I think you'll enjoy them. Thanks.